This is episode 61 of the Next Year Now podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Wolfs, fitness and weight loss expert, and I'm also the co-host of the Weight Loss Podcast. If you want to finally become the best version of you, be it at work or in life, then you need to start listening to the Next Year Now podcast with my good friend Tom Hefner.
We try and work around things. We do all these, you know, corporate initiatives, and we get foosball tables and do karaoke nights and do bonding lunches and everything, but we're not actually speaking about the elephant in the room. And so sometimes just naming, hey guys, we're doing all this stuff to make ourselves a great culture. We still don't have one. What's going on?
Welcome to the Next Year Now podcast with Tom Hefner. Tom believes that if you really want to thrive at work and in life, then every day purposeful habits and practices are vital. The Next Year Now podcast will not only help you identify and integrate these habits into your daily life, but also bring you key insights and lessons from some of the most successful people in their fields. And here is your host, Tom Hefner.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast devoted to helping you thrive at work and in life. The topic of habits and practices is always front and center in our discussion, but we also explore how we use these habits and practices to improve our personal development, productivity, creativity, health and well-being, business, and entrepreneurship. Culture eats strategy for breakfast. That's a phrase made famous by management guru Peter Drucker. But cultivating that culture is easier said than done. And that's where my guest this week, Anise Cavanaugh, can help you and your organization. She helps create a contagious culture for organizations that sets them on the path to success. In our conversation, I'll be asking Anise to discuss how we can create a healthy, contagious culture in our workplace, Anise's IEP model, and how it can help you be better at work right now, how you can optimize leadership in your organization, book recommendations to help you cultivate your own healthy culture in life and at work, and so much more. Anise Cavanaugh is devoted to helping people show up and bring their best selves to the table in order to create significant positive impact in their lives. And she's the creator of the IEP method, which is intentional energetic presence. Don't worry if you don't know what that is. We're going to get all into that in just a moment. She's an advisor and thinking partner to leaders and organizations around the world. And she's the author of Contagious Culture: Show Up, Set the Tone, and Intentionally Create an Organization That Thrives. As a leading voice on intention, energy, and presence and culture, she helps people unlock greater leadership potential, collaborate more inspiringly, create more openly, intuit more bravely, and lead more joyfully and effectively. You know, top innovators and executives in companies like IDEO, Zingerman's, Cooper, GM Financial, Vistaprint, Fitbit, Nike, like the list goes on. She's legit. She's the real deal. Have all engaged with Anise to strengthen team health, maximize leadership impact, and optimize company culture. In addition to appearing in publications like Harvard Business Review, love that journal, The Huffington Post, CEO.com, and The New York Times, Anise writes for Inc.com in her column, Showing Up. If you haven't checked that out, you should really do so. It's an awesome, awesome column. And she's just published her most recent book, The Leader You Will Be, An Invitation. This is a leadership storybook. You definitely want to check this out if you're at all interested in leadership. And she's currently working on her next book, Contagious You: Unlock Your Incredible Power to Influence, Lead, and Create the Impact You Want. And that's due out in fall of 2019. Anise, thank you for joining us today, and welcome to the show, my friend.
Hello, Tom. It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Ah, love it. Look, as a podcaster and a businessman, I speak with a lot of entrepreneurs. And one of the most common challenges I discuss with them is how they can create a powerful and healthy culture at work. It's so important because culture, man, it can make or break your company. And it determines whether you have a good experience at work or a bad experience. And that's why I'm so excited to be talking to Anise today about her books, Contagious Culture, and the just released The Leader You Will Be. And also to dive into her IEP model to help us show up more effectively and impressively. So let's just dive right into this conversation. Let's get after it. Anise, share, if you would, what is your book, Contagious Culture, all about? And what led you to write this book?
Oh, great. All right. So Contagious Culture, the book is about creating a highly positive contagious culture. But the surprise about the book is that the book is not, only the last two parts of that book are about culture and organization. The first three parts of the book, about 50, 60% of that book is really about you as a leader and how you are the culture. And so that was the surprise about that book, is most people pick that up thinking, oh, great, I'm going to read this book, I'm going to learn how to fix my culture, and I'm going to find all these tricks, and I'm going to get the bulletproof, you know, the bullet print lists, and I'll figure that all out. And then they pick it up, they start reading it, and about, you know, a third in, they go, oh, gosh, I'm the culture. So the Contagious Culture is the book about how we all create culture together. There's a myth that, you know, they create culture, the executives create the culture, the manager creates the culture, everybody else creates the culture. And while they all have a ton of influence, we actually each individually emanate the culture we want to be a part of or not. So that is what the book's about. And I wrote it because I was seeing this theme everywhere I went, working with business leaders in different organizations. And I just wanted to get it into one nice container for people to be able to access it anywhere.
You know, that reminds me of some advice somebody gave me one time about, if you want to be a good parent, like, don't worry about telling your kids what to do or making a lot of rules or all this, you know, like, people really get besides themselves by trying to find, you know, the latest book on parenting and things like that. They said, just look, if you want to be a good parent and you want them to be good, just demonstrate what good behavior looks like. Start with you. And I think in some ways, that's what you're saying, right? Is like, hey, if you want a good culture, start with you first.
Yeah, 1,000%. And I love that about parenting. I could not agree more, because the parenting and a family culture, you know, parenting, the family, that's culture as well. So that was the other thing about the book, is that it's not just about organizational culture. It's looking at your, any system you're in. So it could be your family, it could be your marriage, it could be your friendship, it could be your community. So I thank you for sharing that with me about parenting. I'm going to use that.
Well, look, let's dive a little deeper here. What is the IEP method, and how can it help us, be it in our, you know, our personal lives, or even just helping create a contagious culture?
Sure, absolutely. So IEP stands for Intentional Energetic Presence. And I break it down in two different ways. First, it's being intentional about the energetic presence you bring to anything that you do. So, you know, the minute I walk in the door, the minute I walk into a meeting, the minute I walk in to see my children, anybody, I am projecting energy. Like, there is a vibe, so to speak, that I am putting out into the world, and that is going to create impact. It's either going to be received by people in the room as an invitation, or maybe, you know, creating a little bit of contraction or restriction. And so being intentional about the energy I bring to anything I do and how I'm showing up with it, whether it's, you know, washing my dishes even, or talking to my child, or talking to my team member, being intentional about that, I've got the power to do that. So the first piece is being intentional about the energetic presence you bring to everything in your life. And the second piece is about, if you break that, those three words down, there's intention, what I want to have happen. There is energy, which to me is all about how I take care of myself, my energy and my stamina, so that I can have the impact I want to have. And then there's presence, which is how am I showing up with every single thing that I do, and how present am I to this person? So that's the breakdown of what that stands for.
So let's try to operationalize that a little bit.
Sure.
What does that look like in practice? Can we go through like an example of, like, whether it's, you know, a personal example or something at work, where we kind of go through each of those phases or those parts?
Sure. Absolutely. Well, so in the methodology, there's actually three different components, Tom. And so one of them is just the simplicity of rebooting your presence before you walk into anything. The second component, just to make this really practical, is building your foundation. So doing everything you can to take care of yourself so that you can reboot more effectively. And I can break this down more for you if you'd like in a bit. And then the third piece is creating intentional impact. So there's an actual framework. So there's three different components: reboot, build the field, and then create intentional impact. And if we look at this in the simplest version, let's just say I'm walking into a team meeting. And let's just say I've had a really busy morning, or I'm frustrated for some reason, or whatever is happening. When I walk into that room as leader, I have a couple of options. I can cancel my meeting because I'm in a bad mood. I can bring all that negative energy in there with me, in which case I promise you my team is going to feel it and they will respond accordingly. I can, right? I can pretend that nothing's going on and just go and go, hey there, hi there, ho there, everything is so fantastic. My team, the people in that room, they will sense that there's something that is incongruent about me. They might not know, but they will sense it. Or all of those are viable, potentially very fatal options. But the other choice that I have is to actually just reboot and to take a breath and to remember, oh, my presence has impact. What is the impact I want to have on this room? So before I even open the door, before I even put my hand on that doorknob, I take a breath. I take care of myself, you know, whatever I need to do to take care of myself, which 9 times out of 10, it's just taking a breath and noticing I'm here now. I'm okay. I want to go in and have impact on this team. So how do I want to show up? So the minute I've done that and I can reboot my presence and set an intention for how I want to be with this team and how I want to feel, that in itself takes me to a new level of presence. And now I can be more in tune to what's actually happening in the present moment versus what just happened 5 minutes ago. So that's a really, really simple version of a reboot.
Okay. I love that. I try to do something similar, although I think I was missing the cognitive portion of that, which is, I don't know if you ever heard of coherent breathing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course.
Yeah, so I'll try to use that when I get a little bit anxious or stressed, just to take a moment to do a little bit of coherent breathing to kind of relax myself. But I think I forget or I didn't realize that kind of the other part of that, which you were saying, is just like to cognitively, to mentally take that break to reboot myself.
This probably fits really nicely here. I usually talk about this later, and let's talk about it right now because there's a framework. So one of the things that I see happening the most right now is people are so busy and they're so overwhelmed with everything that's happening in their lives. And so there's a framework, and this is one of the components of the IAP methodology. It's literally called the 5 steps to creating intentional impact. And the framework is simply before you go into any conversation, any project, any meeting, anything, you go through these 5 steps. And the first step is just getting really clear about the outcomes you want to get out of that meeting. That just the outcomes, like the tangible things that are going to happen that would not have happened if you'd not had this conversation. Mm. The second component is getting clear and connecting with the emotional impact you want to have on the human beings that you're going to be with in that room. So this is a place where I find we move so fast, we often skip these steps. But, you know, step one, what are the outcomes I want? Step two, what's the emotional impact I want to have? How do I want people to feel with me in that room? And, oh, by the way, how would I like to feel? So that's the second step. The third step is looking at, okay, well, if I'm going to create these outcomes and this impact, what presence, how am I going to have to actually show up in this room? If I walk in that room and I'm irritated and not present and I'm contracted, I am going to not be, I will not create the outcomes I'm hoping for. I won't. So third step is presence. Fourth step is, what do I have to believe? You know, so what will I have to believe about the people in the room? What do I have to believe about the project we're working on? What do I have to believe about myself so that I can be congruent in the way I'm showing up? And the fifth step is, what am I going to actually do? And so if you take those steps, you can apply those steps to your entire day. I did it this morning at the very beginning of the day before I'm even out of bed. I'm going through my 5 steps. I'm applying, what outcomes do I want today? How do I want to make people feel? How do I want to feel? How do I want to show up today? What do I need to believe today to show up that way? And what do I have to do? So it can be applied for the whole day, or it can be applied meeting to meeting to meeting.
Nice. I like that, to your point where everybody is so busy, that's a nice way to check the busyness and help us slow down our thinking so that we can be more intentional.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that can happen in 2 seconds, right? I don't have to. The more I practice that, by the way, the easier it's going to be for me to access that model. But that can happen in 2 seconds with just noticing before I walk in the door, you know, it's just a simple reboot. What do I want to create? That's a 1-2 second thing. Easy peasy. Or if I've got the time and the luxury of 5 minutes at the beginning of the day or 5 minutes before a meeting, I can actually work myself through that model. And we have people that, I mean, I've got clients who say that every time they're on a plane flying to meet people, they're running through those 5 steps for every single meeting they're going to. Every time we've had people use those 5 steps to navigate their divorce, to navigate the conversation with their children about the divorce. Like, so it's an ounce of proactiveness is worth so much. So I know, I don't know if that's helpful at this point to break down that framework, but that's basically what we're talking about is how intentional are you about showing up, and are you clear about what you want to create? And oh, by the way, how are you taking care of yourself so that you can show up more gracefully and powerfully and effectively?
No, I think that's perfect. Let's dive a little bit deeper into that, in the sense that if we, in kind of each of those things, you talked about some emotional energy and what are we bringing and what are the outcomes that we want for the people that are there with us. But when we think about showing up in these instances, what are some tips or habits that we can use to set ourselves up for success, be it going through that 5-step process or otherwise?
So the second part of the methodology is around building a strong energetic presence and foundation. And there's a framework, and your listeners can access this framework. We've got it. I'll give you a link for it and everything. But what we look at is the first part is their essential you. So the essential you is right in the middle of the entire IAP model. And the essential you is all about my core vision, my values, my purpose, just me being authentically who I am. So one thing for people to start strengthening that field and do what we're talking about is the clearer I can be about my own core values, then the more power I have to stay in congruency with myself. So just becoming aware of what my values are, becoming aware of the fact that I actually have my own space. You know, I have my own space. There's my space, Tom. There's your space. There's the rest of the world's space. Just even being aware of the fact that I have my own space, that in itself can shift our relationship with overwhelm. And so that's one, that just that awareness. I always say that 70% of this work is in awareness. The other 30% is what you decide to do about it. And then if you go out a little bit further, looking at how do I actually support myself in that space, that's where we break it down and we look at four different components, which is the first being your physical and environmental energy. So physical and environmental energy is things like, what are you eating? How are you taking care of yourself? How are you sleeping? Are you getting me time? How clean is your closet? You know, does your environment support you? I mean, literally, it's so funny. I cannot tell you how many people have gone through this work and have reached out to me later to say, oh my gosh, I left the session. I cleaned my closet and I changed my meetings from 60-minute meetings to 50-minute meetings, and my life feels totally different. Because the 60-minute meetings going to a 50 means they've just created 10 more minutes of space in their life to actually reboot, take care of themselves, and make sure they can be fully present for the next meeting. And cleaning their closet means they're setting the tone for the day for themselves, where they're not starting their day off with absolute chaos. So what are you eating? How are you taking care of yourself? How is your environment supporting you? That's a simple thing to look at in that first quadrant, which is all about mental and environmental energy, or not mental, excuse me, physical and environmental. Then we move into your mental and your emotional energy, which is all about the thoughts that you're thinking, the way that you frame things, assumptions you make, making sure that you're getting support. Little simple tricks for that one are simply like turning any complaint into a request. You know, underneath any complaint is just an uncommunicated request. So the minute I can be aware that I'm complaining, and that's not compelling at all. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but
it's not fun.
It's not that fun. And it's not really, you know, all of us have had people complain to us, and it's kind of like, you know, it's not incredibly energizing. We've all complained, or at least I have. So I notice when I'm complaining, that's an energetic drain. But if I can catch myself contracting and feeling that like, this doesn't feel good to me, if I can catch myself in that moment, if I can flip it and reframe it into a request, I've got my power back. And so, and I also am probably going to be a lot more compelling to you as the person I'm complaining to in order to create some kind of a different result. So, you know, complaints to requests. The one that I am really into right now in that second quadrant is how we talk to ourselves. So this whole idea of self-kindness, mm-hmm. I think sometimes when people look at this work, they go, oh my gosh, I don't have time to work on my energetic presence. And my thought around that is we don't have time not to, because life is getting busier and busier. And the things that I offer in this methodology do not have to take more time. So for example, with self-kindness, it takes me equal amount of time to talk mean to myself as it does to just actually shift it into something a little bit more kind. It's not extra time or even energy. In fact, it creates more space for me. So self-kindness is another one, just catching our thoughts.
Yeah, that was a game changer for me. I had somebody tell me, because I'm a very self-critical person, and somebody said, hey, before you criticize yourself next time, just take a moment to say, like, well, if a friend had done something similar, like, what would you say to them? Or what advice would you give to them? And it's amazing sometimes the thing, if you take that step back and realize that you would never say some of the stuff that you would say to yourself to other people. Like, you'd be a horrible person if you did.
Right. Yeah. My moment of that was when I realized I was pregnant with my daughter. My daughter's 13 years old now, but I remember 13 years ago, pregnant with her, sitting in her nursery, you know, getting ready for her. And I had done something and it had not gone as well as I wanted it to go. And I was giving myself a really proper self-beating. And all of a sudden I stopped cold and I went, oh my gosh, I'm going to be a mom of a little girl. Would I talk to her the way I'm talking to myself right now? And that was my moment where my relationship with self-talk really started to shift. So I think all of us have that moment or that awareness, like what you had, if we're paying attention to it.
Yeah, I know. I 100% agree on that. Well, look, I want to pivot a bit here to thinking about the organization, or, you know, kind of the company perspective. What are some ways that we can use IEP or even the insights from your most recent book on leadership to help us optimize leadership in our organization or company?
Well, the way I look at it is that, so every single person creates the culture, every single one of us. So the way that it doesn't work is for me to go into my organization and go, okay, guys, we got really bad IEP. We all need to change. You guys need to change. Here's what we're going to do to change. Like, that's how it doesn't work. What does work, though, is that the minute I am aware that I have a culture or a team dynamic or a relationship that does not work for me, that does not feel good, the minute I'm aware of that, I am now in a position of response ability, meaning I'm able to respond to the situation so that I can start to shift it. So as soon as I see it, if I'm the one that spotted it, I'm responsible for now starting to address it. And the way that looks for me and the way that I work with companies is, if you don't like your culture, the first place to look is, how am I actually contributing to this culture? You know, even if the simplest way is that I'm not happy about the culture, and so therefore I leave work and I go home and I complain about it. Now I'm creating a culture of complaining, because I guarantee you other people are doing the same. If I see stuff that I don't like and I'm not speaking up about it, if I'm not actually getting curious or getting in there to help make things better, then I'm contributing to that culture by abdicating. And so the philosophy is that we all create the culture that we're in. Whatever we are doing, whether we love our culture or we can't stand our culture, there is a way that we're showing up that adds to that outcome. And so if I can look at how am I contributing to it first, that starts to give me a little bit more awareness to look at, well, how might I show up differently in order to support this? And I know that this is sometimes a really frustrating answer for people, because they're like, well, wait, not every single person knows that they have their IEP, and not every single person knows how to do this in ease. So, you know, how does that work? And what I find, Tom, is that it only takes one person or a small group of people to start showing up differently and to start getting curious with the organization. And even, you know, practically speaking, if I have a team that it's not going really well and I'm really irritated with my team dynamics, the simplest way I can go in there is I can go in and go, hey guys, how do you feel about our team meetings? Like, how are we doing with our team meetings? How do we feel?
They
about
suck.
Yeah, right. You just said it. You nailed it, right? They suck. Meetings suck. They're so horrible, right? So from here, I have a choice. And these meetings suck. I've got a choice. Oh my gosh, you're right. They totally suck. It's so bad. I can't believe how bad. Our culture does not support our meetings. Like, I'm being really sarcastic. I can go that way. Or I can say, great, our meetings suck. You know, I agree. I do not think they're as good as they could be. What would we like instead? And so what does a good meeting look like, you guys? How would we like our dynamics to be? And if I can get curious with my team and get them invited into the conversation around what are we doing that's working great and that's what's not working, if we can start to look at that collaboratively as a team, now we can start to look at what we want to create and what would showing up differently look like. What agreements would we want to put in place in order to support us? And that is a very simple next step that people will take after they come to our sessions, where they'll go back and they'll go, great, I know this, but now my team doesn't know it. So that's their homework, is to go back and have a team meeting and go, hey guys, how do you feel about the way things are working? And that is how you start to create a ripple effect of culture. It's like one person can start a big movement.
It's like that parenting thing, you know, demonstrate by example.
You know, Tom, I love the parenting thing, because where you're pointing me right now is, this is a humaning thing. This is for anything. This mm-hmm. is, you know, if I can't control anybody else. I can't control anybody in my relationships. I can't control my organization. I can't control anything. But I can absolutely control how I show up. I can choose the way I think about things. I can choose to hold my space, you know, so I can choose to, so to speak, stay in my own lane so that I'm not getting sucked into all the drama. And the way that I choose to show up, that's the best influence I possibly can have on other things to help things go right.
No, I love that. I had this, I like two things too. What you're saying there is that piece about curiosity. I think that's a huge piece, because just getting a little bit curious can overcome some of those thinking traps that we do. Like when people are like, well, here's another meeting, it's going to suck. And like just taking the time to get a little bit curious of like, well, why? Like, how can we make this better, right? I mean, I think that's a huge thing to be able to do.
Well, you know, the other thing about curiosity, so I love curiosity, because curiosity creates space. You know, there's a saying, when furious, get curious instead. You know, it's like,
I love that.
Isn't that fun? So if I can take a breath, if I notice I'm really irritated or something's not working, if I can take a deep breath and go, all right, what's happening here? Why? What is it that's not feeling good? Why is it that we keep having terrible meetings? What's going on for this person that I'm giving this feedback to for the eighth time and they're not hearing it? Like, what is it? Like, how am I showing up in that? What's happening for them? If I can shift into curiosity or even gratitude, I now create more space and I become more of an energetic invitation for that person to have a real conversation with me. The other piece of this is that curiosity, if it's authentic and it's in service of, it creates more space for vulnerability, which of course vulnerability then creates more space for us to actually get in there and do good work together and be human. So I am a huge fan of curiosity, and I'm also a huge fan of just simply naming when something is not feeling good in an organization. I see so many times we try and work around things. We do all these, you know, corporate initiatives, and we get foosball tables and do karaoke nights and do bonding lunches and everything, but we're not actually speaking about the elephant in the room. And so sometimes just naming, hey guys, we're doing all this stuff to make ourselves a great culture. We still don't have one. What's going on? Like, what would a great culture look like? What do we actually want? That conversation is gold.
Mm-hmm.
So curiosity and naming it.
Yeah, you know, I love that. I had this one professor who used to, one last thing on culture, he used to do this thing where he'd be like, he called it positive gossip, and he would go, hey, go into like the admin's office, be like, I heard that Jenny down the hallway is amazing. Like he would do this like positive gossiping, you know. I can't remember some of the other examples he would, you know, come up like, I heard she made coffee for everyone and it was outstanding. Aww. You know, like it's just as a way to kind of flip the head on like some of the negativity that can run amok with, you know, like you said, the drama.
Oh gosh, I love that so much. You know what that, so I love so positive gossip. This is a new thing that could be a book for you. Gossip. You know, but here's the other thing, just speaking to shifting culture, there's a rule in this work, a rule, and I put the word rule in quotes, but this resonates for you. The rule is that the lowest vibration in the room will win unless somebody, and that's you since you're seeing it, unless you are really good at holding your own state. So what this looks like is, we've all had it happen. We walk into a room, we're excited to be there, we're in a really good mood. You know, maybe it's we run into somebody at the grocery store, but we're in a good space. We feel good. We come in, and in that meeting room, we've got maybe six people. We're all happy to be there. And there's two people, or maybe even just one, who's sitting at the table. Their energy's really low. Their arms are crossed. And it just feels like they're devoted to sucking the life out of the room. They're naysaying everything. They're like, no, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. Or their energy is just really heavy and you can feel it.
Frown town.
And what's that?
I call it frown town.
Frown town. Yes, frown town. And what usually will happen is, even those six people that came in all happy to be there, usually what happens is what? they start to meet, they start to match the lower energy in the room. And so then what happens is the six people were in a really good space, the two were not. They try and bring those people up. It doesn't work. They end up matching their lower energy because it's much easier to go to the dark side than it is to stay light a lot of times. And then everybody walks out of there going, oh, see, meetings totally suck. And the two people that were in the corner bringing the whole thing down were like, see, we're right. This meeting was going to suck.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Completely. And they've just won. So the lowest vibration won. And so where this changes is the minute you've got awareness, the minute I have awareness that there is that person in a room or that the energy does not feel right, my number one job as leader becomes to take a deep breath, hold my space, notice what's happening, be curious about it, but to not become it. And that is another example of where it only takes one person to really start to make a little dent in the energetic presence of an organization as a whole or a culture.
Yeah, no, 100% agree on that. If we wanted to learn more about IEP through training or if we wanted to bring it into our organization, what would be the best way for us to do that?
Oh, great. So, okay. Well, for your listeners, we have a secret website page.
I love secret.
It's very secret, Tom. It's IEP.io. So IEP.io.
Okay.
And if they go to that, they'll get on, and they put their email in and everything, blah, blah, blah. They'll get on a list that will send them an IEP sheet that's got, you know, the entire methodology on it. So they can just use that to set their intentions every day if this work resonates for them. It also has like virtual presence toolkits, a bunch of stuff that we give to listeners and anytime I speak, so that you guys can integrate this work. It's totally free, but you'll get information on books, events, and all that good stuff. So they're welcome to that. And the other piece is if they wanted to come, we do a biannual IEP Live. It's a two-day immersion into this work. So we do those about twice a year. We're going to do the next one, I think, in April. Then we'll do another one in October. But we also will go and do them privately for organizations. So if your organization wants to bring this work in, I just actually put 200 people through this program. We did five different sessions with the company. Yeah, it was amazing. We did five sessions with 30 to 40 people each for the same company that wanted their entire HR and talent team to go through it so they could spread this company out to 10.
That's awesome.
It was amazing. It was so fun. So we do that too.
Okay, awesome.
But yeah.
Well, look, before I move on, you know, what else from your books would you like us to know? What am I missing that you think is really important for us to have before we move on to the last part of the show?
Oh, sure. Okay, well, so contagious culture, that went into culture, that went into, you know, as I said, you as well. I would definitely say that one is a really good book to pick up, especially if you're looking for structures for your team. If you're looking for the Super Seven of cultural health, I just spoke yesterday to a bunch of physicians and we were looking at cultural health and how does their physician well-being tie into their cultural well-being. And that was really interesting. So I would say grab that book for sure to pick up on, you know, to learn the IEP methodology and then also to get the structures for creating a healthier culture. The Leader You Will Be that just released a couple weeks ago, that is totally different, Tom. So that's something, it's actually a poem.
Okay.
It is a, yeah, it's something different than anything I've ever done. I have these things that'll happen where I'll spend time immersed in an organization or in an industry and I wake up and I'm super inspired and then I get this little ditty that downloads and then what happens is I write it up and then I go back and I play with it for years. And The Leader You Will Be is a result of working with many different organizations and pulling it all together into a leadership storybook. And so that's a really beautiful, just it's beautifully designed and my team did it. And that's something that we're finding a lot of people are getting for, especially for their kids, which is really interesting, or even their college kids.
Yeah.
And then, it's been amazing. And then Contagious You, that'll come out next November. I believe our launch date is November 2019. That's also being published by McGraw-Hill. And that is going to dig even further into you as leader. But not only how do you as leader create more influence, but how do you protect yourself even more effectively from the negative stuff that's going on? And, you know, the guy, I always call him George. I always call it George, the guy in the room who's just convinced that none of this applies to him. And everybody is sending me emails saying, Anise, please get George to get on board with this content. So it'll be looking at how do you become even more influential in your own personal leadership through the way that you're contagious and how you show up, but also how do you have better influence and protection if needed with the Georges of the world so that you can continue to do your magical work.
Love that. Love that. And I can't wait for that to come out.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, look, it's time for my favorite part of the show. Anise, you've gone through the demanding process of writing a book. So yeah. I think you'll enjoy this discussion. And this is where we talk about one of the very best habits we can adopt today. And that's the habit of reading.
Uh-huh.
I want you to think about, you know, the books that you've really enjoyed over the years or books that have impacted you deeply. What are the two or three that stand out for you?
Okay. Easy. Okay.
All right.
Anything. Sorry. I get so
excited. No, it's good. I'm pumped. I want to hear this.
I love books. Like if I could have one magic superpower, it would be able to put my hand on a book and to get the learning from that book in 1 second. I forget there was a movie years and years and years ago where that was one of the guy's superpowers, where she could put her hand, or it was a guy or girl, I can't remember, but they could put their hand on a book and they could get all that information and keep it. But literally, I'd rather be able to do that than fly. So, the books that have had huge influence on me are anything by the Arbinger Institute. So in particular, Leadership and Self-Deception, that book, it's a short, easy read. That was life-changing for me. The Anatomy of Peace, that's another one by the Arbinger Institute. That work has had a lot of influence on the way that I think and the way that I see people and how I relate. So those two books in particular, I think anything by Brené Brown, as always, is magical.
Yeah.
And another one that really had great influence for me was Ignore Everybody by Hugh McLeod years ago. Have you read that one?
I haven't, but it sounds right up my alley.
I think you would love it. It's simple. He draws these really great little pictures. It's thought provoking. It's a quick, easy read. And that one stays on my shelf and I pick that up about once a year. So I would say those are the ones that I think of right off the top of my head that have had big impact for me personally.
Okay. Here's a book recommendation for you. You may have already read it, but there's a book called Curious by Todd Kashdan. And he dives into the strength of curiosity. And basically, he spent a large part of his career as a psychologist at George Mason University studying curiosity, among other things. But he really dives deep into the virtues of curiosity. And like, it's kind of like one of these super strengths that, you know, if you exercise that more, if you use that, if you lean on that strength more, you know, all good things start to happen, which, you know, you've already talked about anecdotally.
I have not heard of that book. I will definitely put that on my next list. I had a mentor tell me years and years ago, he said, Anise, the minute you lose your curiosity, you need to fire yourself from ever working with a client again. and I could not agree more, because I think that that's the death of curiosity is the death of any relationship, I think.
Yeah.
So I will pick that up. Thank you for that.
Yep. Final question. What's next for you that you're really excited about?
Okay. Well, I got to finish writing this book. I got to finish Contagious You. I literally just got back last night from LA. I did my last keynote of the year, I think. And so I wrapped that up yesterday. I've got some work I'm doing with law enforcement next week. And then I'm spending the month of December, a lot of it just really digging in and working on the book. It's in process. It's a process, but I'm excited about that. I'm also incredibly excited about what we call stewardship. So we started running a stewardship program, which is our version of Train the Trainer, a couple of years ago. And that program is really starting to pick up. And so we have other people in the world in different industries who are learning how to teach this methodology. And so
very cool.
Oh, my gosh, Tom, it's been so exciting to just watch them do it, because they're in different industries. We have one in design. We have some in hospitality. We have some in corporate culture. We have not a couple in healthcare, which has been really interesting to see how they're integrating this into their systems. And we have 9 stewards in education. And so we're,
oh, wow.
Oh my gosh. We're running a pilot with 8 stewards who are teaching. They've just taught 1,700 principals and teachers in the school district that represent 24,000 children in the state of California.
Woo.
Yes, I am very excited to see how this pilot continues to unfold. So I'm excited about a lot. I'm excited for Thanksgiving.
Yep.
excited.
Awesome. Well, Anise, thank you so much for sharing your insights, sharing your goodness. This was a fantastic conversation. And I hope that when your book comes out next year, you'll come back on the show and tell us all about the new one.
Oh, I would love to, Tom. Thank you so much. I would love that.
Awesome.
Thank you.
One thing you should have learned by listening to today's episode with Anise is that in order to create a winning culture, you must be intentional. It doesn't happen by accident. So if you really want to build a world-class culture in your organization, then I want you to pay attention right now. And that's because today's episode is sponsored by Tom Hefner Enterprises Innovation Training. It's the fastest, most effective way to improve your organization's ability to innovate, think creatively, and collaborate. And building a culture of innovation, that's what separates the winners from everybody else. If you want to learn more, then go to tomhefner.com/work. You can read all about the innovation training and consulting work that I do. Through my training, I can teach you or your organization how to create transformational ideas and concepts. This is my superpower. This is what I do well. It's how I help to take management consulting executives from zero to hero in just 2 days. Before working with me, they didn't know what innovation was, how or when to use the tools of innovation, but by the end of our 2 days, they were competent and confident in using these methods. And they had a fun time doing it. It's why the CNO, the Chief Naval Officer of the U.S. Navy, trusted me to help build and develop the premier innovation program for the Navy. I promise, whether you're an individual that wants to learn how to think creatively or an organization that wants to boost its innovation chops, I can help you get there. Just head over to tomhefner.com/work and connect with me. You can connect with Anise online through her website, AniseKavanaugh.com, and on Instagram with the handle @AniseKavanaugh. All the links and resources Anise and I discussed can be found at the page created just for this episode. You'll find it all at nextyearnowpodcast.com/61. And finally, just a reminder, if you like the show and you enjoy learning from our guests each week, please consider giving us a rating and review on iTunes. It really helps us stay relevant and findable by listeners like you. That's it for today. I'll see you next time.